Now look at the poultry business from 1900 to 1963. I bought my first poultry setup in April 1911 from my brother Elmer for $18. This amount was later reduced to $15 as I was having trouble keeping up my payments. This included all of his stock, feed, buildings, four of them, and equipment except the incubator. This was part of the fallow system, which was developed by Mr. Philo of Elmira, New York, and was used to some extent from 1905 to about 1915. He published a book, which he sold for $1, and it described the system, which consisted of small units. He sold his incubator, which was a 50-egg oil lamp machine, and his book told how to build the other equipment, such as the fireless brooder and the six-bird laying house. These laying houses were 3 by 6 feet and were 28 inches high, with a flat roof made of a frame of light material and covered with the roll roofing. This was hinged at the back and could be adjusted at various heights. During the winter, it was closed or left flat and hooked down at night, but still left a little ventilation. The roof could be left partly open during the day, which gave the birds direct sunshine. Under the roof was a sliding frame covered with the poultry netting and partly covered with the muslin, which slid endways. The dropping board and roost were combined, being about 14 inches wide and 3 feet long. This was taken out and cleaned each morning and then placed on edge along the back wall for the day. There was one nest for the 6 birds. In general, this system gave very good results for those times, probably due in part to the benefit from the sun which they would get occasionally during the winter. This was one way of keeping a backyard flock, which were quite common at the time. Most farmers at that time had a flock of chickens, usually from 50 to 200. These flocks produced few, if any, eggs during the winter. At that time, there were a few poultry farms in Michigan with flocks up to 1,000, and very few, if any, larger. On these farms, the birds were usually housed in flocks of from 100 to 200 to a pen. A common arrangement in these houses was to have the dropping boards built along the back wall about 40 inches above the floor, with a roost above and the nest underneath the front side. For the most part, these houses depended on glass windows for light, although muslin-covered openings were coming into use. Dropping boards were usually either cleaned daily or about once a week. The floors were usually covered with straw for litter, and grain was fed twice a day in the litter. The litter was cleaned out and changed about every 2 weeks. 4 to 5 square feet of floor space was allowed per bird, as crowding was absolutely ruled out. Probably few poultrymen today realize how low egg production was before 1910 and the reason for it. Production in these large flocks would probably average less than 150 eggs per bird per year, and likely near 100. Let's consider some of the changes that have taken place in poultry keeping during this period. Before 1900, most poultry breeders were fanciers and were breeding for show purposes only. They were trying to develop and improve new varieties and to improve the type, color, and uniformity of these varieties. They were doing little or nothing in breeding for egg production. Why? Well, how could they? They had no trap nests, Therefore, they had no way of knowing whether a hen laid a dozen eggs or 100 in a year. Trap nests first came into use around 1900 or shortly after. That was the first and biggest step toward improving egg production. This was the first tool they had, and many breeders used it to learn how many eggs their birds produced and then to replace their flock from their best layers, if they could. During the next 20 years, many kinds of trap nests were developed and used. Even then, they were limited in their breeding, as they had no satisfactory way to identify chicks from any hen. One of the first methods used was toe punching, or punching holes in the web between the toes of chicks. All chicks from one hen were punched with the same punch mark, such as outside right, inside right, outside left, inside left, and by using different combinations of 2, 3, or 4 punches, it was possible to identify chicks from 15 different hens. This was not satisfactory, as these holes sometimes closed up as the chicks grew, making identification uncertain. The fact that it was limited to 15 individuals made it of little value. About 1910, or shortly after, celluloid leg bands were developed in different sizes and colors. By using different colors on the chicks, some on the right leg and some on the left leg, and then a combination of 2 different colors on each leg, several combinations could be worked out to identify chicks from many hens. However, this was a complicated procedure and was hard to keep a record of. Also, the fact that when they grew to the point where the bands had to be changed to larger ones, it made it a rather complicated and unsatisfactory system. Therefore, until wing bands were developed in about 1918, pedigree breeding was very slow and uncertain. Now the breeder had a team of tools to work with and developed in his efforts to improve egg production, and great progress has been made along this line since. Egg-laying contests were started in about 1912, and they served to awaken poultry keepers all over the country as to the difference in production between individuals and strains. Until 1910 or 15, practically nothing was known of culling as it came to be known. Until this time, there was practically no way of knowing whether a bird was laying or not. Trap nests made possible the discovery of ways to tell if a bird was in production and something of her past production. Some of these discoveries were the pigmentation test, the primary molt, body capacity, and head point. This was called culling and came into use about 1918. So the trap nest and the wing band should have a large part of the credit for the laying ability of our present poultry. Then housing and management have had a part in these changes. The use of electric lights on layers has been another big advantage to the poultrymen, especially during the winter months. They came into use in about 1910 or 1915, and as near as is known, Frank Mitchell of East Lansing was the first to use lights for this purpose. Then, in more recent years, with the use of electric fans and forced ventilations, houses can be whiter, or deeper, as they used to be called. Until 1900, the most common way of hatching and brooding chicks was with the hen. However, there were some oil-burning incubators and brooders in use in 1900 with capacities up to about 300. Mammoth coal-heated incubators were coming into use around that time. Oil-heated brooders came into use about this same time with capacities of 100 to 200 chicks. Coal-heated brooders with hovers were used around 1910. These were room brooders and could handle a few hundred chicks. The Candy Incubator Company in New York made a coal-heated hot water brooder system around 1905 or 1910, which would brood several hundred chicks divided into units of 100 or 200. A few companies were making oil brooders with hovers around 1920 or before, which were used as a two-room system and would brood as many as 1,000 chicks. Shelters for raising pullets were not used in Michigan until 1925 or 1930, although they had been used in other states for some years. One of the biggest changes in poultry keeping is in feeding. In those early days, little or nothing was known of vitamins. Sprouted oats came into use around 1910 or before, and probably furnished some vitamins. The sprouts were 3 or 4 inches long when fed, and they were used during the winter. They were doing something similar in Oregon in 1920, but they called them germinated oats and fed them when the sprouts were just nicely started. And speaking of Oregon, I worked for Carroll Carpenter at Medford in 1921, and he killed horses, ground the meat and bones, and fed it to the chickens. By the way, he had more prolapse or blowouts than I have seen anywhere. I always wondered if it was due to the feeding of so much horse meat. Then another thing that came into use around 1900 or 1905 was bone cutters. The purpose was to feed green cut bone or bones that had not been cooked. This possibly furnished certain vitamins as well as animal protein. About this same time, ground grain and mash came into use. Before this, chicken feed consisted mostly of grain. Philo, in his book, recommended feeding wheat bran in hoppers. About 1905 or later, Park and Pollard of Massachusetts advertised a mash which they called Lay or Bust. I believe that was the first poultry mash on the market. Also about this time, formulas could be found in poultry journals for making mashes. They usually consisted of bran, middlings, ground oats, cornmeal, a little salt, 1% I believe, and meat scrap. Fish meal was also used sometimes with meat scrap or to replace it. Dried milk was used in mashes later. These ingredients were dumped on the floor of the feed room and mixed with a scoop shovel. The first commercial mash I ever used was at Getz's farm in Holland, Michigan in 1919, and that was Redcomb, made by the Hale & Hunter Company of Chicago. We mixed all of our mash and grain the first 2 years of the Michigan Egg Laying Contest in 1923 and 24. Vitamins were becoming known and used around 1920 and later. Before this time, they were not heard of in poultry, but rather mashes were spoken of as a certain balance, such as 1-4 or 1-5. This referred to the proportion of protein to carbohydrates and fats. It was considered important to have part of this protein in the animal protein. This balance was considered to be the all-important thing before 1920. Semi-solid buttermilk came in onto the market around this time, and it furnished considerable protein and probably vitamins. It seemed to be quite an addition to the ration and was a great aid in controlling coccidiosis. The thing that may surprise some is that cod liver oil was not used until about 1920, and then only experimentally. The first I knew of cod liver oil for poultry was in the spring of 1923 when Shorty Huffman used it on some chicks which had rickets at the college poultry plant. He tried it on them and they came out of it. I believe it was about 2 years later when it was first recommended for general use for poultry. Those first few years it was used either in semi-solid buttermilk or mixed with the grain about twice a week. A few years later, it was mixed in commercial mashes. Cod liver oil has worked wonders in poultry rations, not only for chicks, but for layers and breeders as well. Before cod liver oil was used, most flocks depended on glass windows for light. This glass filtered out the beneficial effects of the sun, and the vitamin D in cod liver oil made up for this. Chicks raised during the winter with glass windows were almost sure to have rickets. The layers and breeders did not lay well during the winter unless they had direct sunshine. One indication of this was poor eggshells, and in extreme cases, they would go down on their legs, that is, show signs of rickets. These birds would feel like a dish rag, as I used to say. Professor Ernest Forman used to say that eggs would hatch better from a hen that was coming into production rather than eggs laid as she was going out of production. That was very likely true, as they did go out of production for a time in the winter, probably due mainly to lack of vitamin D. After a hen was out of production for a time, she would get built up and start laying again, and those first eggs would likely contain more vitamin D, which accounted for them hatching better. Other vitamins and minerals have been added to the ration since then, but I doubt if any have been as valuable as cod liver oil. The early houses were equipped with dropping boards, which left all of the floor for litter. Later dropping pits were used, and they covered about one quarter of the floor space. These were built up about 1.5 feet, and the top covered with wire and roofs. Deep litter or build-up litter came into use around 1940 or later. This was started in late summer, and litter was added as needed, and it was left to build up during the year and cleaned out only once a year, and sometimes it was left 2 years. Electrically heated batteries were used for brooding chicks the first few weeks, starting about 1925. Then a few years later, about 1930, batteries or cages were used for layers. These were small compartments for a single bird. They were rather popular for a few years and then mostly disappeared. However, they are gaining in popularity during the past few years. Some are made with larger compartments and will hold 2, 3, or even 4 birds each.